message. Send it out on Robin Thicke. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. If one of us is chained, none of us are free.
That's Ray Charles and Eric Clapton wailing away on guitar with None of Us Are Free. This is from Ray Charles' 1993 album, My World. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Therese Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday because, well, the madness is all around us. We have to do something about it. The one thing we can do is at least get it off of our chest, get it out of our minds. It's another week of mayhem that has brought us ever closer to a political apocalypse, yet we're still standing and relatively sane. Polls are showing that Free Your Mind Friday is the single most effective defense against the system's nefarious mind control plans. Actually, there are no such polls. But it is the lying season, so I decided I'll just kind of give a nod to the lying system and put in a little lie of my own. But it is the best form for the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. Now, that part is true. Call 888-874-4888 and give us your take on the political hell that we've been living in, or on any other subject that you think warrants further discussion and debate. 888-874-4888. Lots of developments, and it's going to get even more intense. We have the WikiLeaks emails and material being dumped almost on a minute-by-minute basis now. And it's interesting, Gary just referred to it, about the fact that you're not getting any reporting at all. I mean, big news. You're not getting any reporting on these issues at all in the mainstream press. They have come to a determination, apparently. They had a meeting or phone calls, or they have some kind of a unanimous agreement that they're just going to ignore anything that seems to challenge Hillary Clinton's position in the race, which they say is ahead of Donald Trump. But if you can imagine, this is going on with the so-called major candidates. Imagine what the minor candidates are getting in the way of coverage. Absolutely nothing. And even so, the information that we're getting is just so awful and so clearly biased. It is almost as if there was, in fact, some kind of an understanding about the role the media would be playing to shape our minds in this political season. Well, anyway, that's up for discussion. The week's programming is up for discussion. And anything else you think is worthy of discussion is up for discussion. 888-874-4888. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, Therese. How are you and how are you feeling?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. Listen, sis, this is an absolute embarrassment, this whole election cycle. I mean, for you to have an election cycle to where as all you're doing is basically talking about sexual harassment and not the issues that are facing this country here and abroad, it makes us seem like we're a joke. And the more and more I talk to some of the people that I know that live outside of this country, the more and more they laugh at us. They are just absolutely amazed by what is going on with this presidential campaign. I have a friend of mine that lives over in England, and, you know, we talk a little bit. And he was telling me that basically what happened over there with this Brexit is about to happen here in America if someone like a Donald Trump gets into office, and that how the people over there are just absolutely shocked and surprised by the way the campaign is being run and the way that the information in the media is being disseminated.
All right. Well, that is fine, and the observation is dead on. But really, is that the most important thing about how the campaigns are being covered and so forth? We have that established, and it's been established for quite some time. The question is, what are people doing? What are people likely to do? And that's been our discussion. Irrespective of how the race is being covered, we have very little understanding of where the people are in terms of their decisions in electing whoever it is that they select. What's going on with the people? We know what the carnival that's going on. You can't avoid it. It's so evident, and we get constant barrage of news centering on the silliness that you just pointed out. Good, that's established. The major question is, in light of this, what, therefore, are the people's decisions going to be, especially those who consider themselves outside of this political system? What is their choice?
Well, I think the choice is that some of us will write in who we feel we would like to see be president. Some of us will vote for the third party candidate. But honestly and truthfully, most of us will just vote local and leave the whole presidential thing alone. And I think on the whole, most black people are being scared into voting for Hillary Clinton. I think that a great deal of white people are buckling down and are going to vote for Donald Trump. And when it's all said and done, things are going to continue. I think the biggest thing that I'm disappointed is that we haven't generated enough forces or enough positions to put out the idea that we should set up some kind of third party to challenge
it's too late.
Both
it's
of
too late
parties.
For that. It is just way too
right.
late.
But I'm
for,
saying
for
on
that.
The collective, I'm saying we need to move forward from this
yes.
day on. We should be moving forward to set up some sort of agenda to bring together the forces of Bernie, the forces of the Green Party, and all others who are discontented with what's going on. But, I mean, the reality is that we really don't know who's going to win because the media is not being honest and disseminating information in regard to the wicketry of both of these individuals. And also, there's no discussion of policies. There's no discussion of anything that would make a person want to go out there to vote. So whereby that puts a Donald Trump in more of a chance to get into office than we really think, because the people that are backing him are strong. The
but
people
here's
that
the
are backing Hillary Here, Clinton are weak.
Here's the point. In our discussions, there seems to have been a consensus that the carnival that concerns the duopoly is none of our business, really. What we need to be concentrating on is what is our alternative? What is it that we are constructing as a shadow system that would really take our aggregate views and concerns into consideration to formulate some political response to this nonsense? We don't need any more information about how crazy this system has become. We don't need any more. It's been established. So we need to start from the point of view that it is not serving our needs. Great. The question is, what are we doing? That's the question we've been asked here all the time to respond to. Thanks so much for your call and for getting us started today. Judy from New York, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hello?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, I've been trying for the past week, but at any rate, I got in today, and I just want to say that, as you said earlier, we're aware of the situation, and in addition, the fact that the WikiLeaks did not tell us anything we didn't know. It just confirmed what we already knew, and how much more evil they are than we really knew. So, from my perspective, I am a black female, 69 years old, the demographic that's primarily voting for Hillary Clinton, but not me. And I've been taking a lot of flack for that. I can only imagine the comments that you received when you didn't vote for Barack Obama, because I'm not voting out of fear. I'm supporting the Green Party despite the negative comments that we hear, that I've heard about the Green Party and how they don't do this and how they don't do this, and they haven't done this in the past. I believe that there are only that's a way that we have of making an unprecedented, I think it's an unprecedented opportunity to say that we don't support the two-party system any longer. So I'm putting all my focus on that at this point. I have three items that I want to do after the election, but this week I went up to the Bronx, and I stood out on the Grand Concourse handing out flyers, advertising, trying to get people into the rally with Jill Stein and Ajay Mubaraka. And I, from my perspective, it was successful. It was a good crowd, and I think when people know what she stands for, they will really vote for her. I really believe that. But a lot of people don't know. But standing out on the Grand Concourse, which got a bit scary for a while, you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm for the people that do know about the Green Party. So my focus is to make an impact. And if we can just get half of the Bernie supporters to vote Green, I think that will make an impact. And so that's my focus.
So how will you measure success? You're looking to move the Green Party beyond the 3% of the national vote it consistently has been getting.
Yes.
So that's one way to measure progress, in other words.
Yes, I'm hoping for 10%. And from my online community, I think the numbers are larger than you hear. I think from the online communities that I'm participating in, that there's a lot more support than it would appear for Jill Stein. So I hope that's the case, and that maybe instead of the 5%, we actually get 10%, so that there will be funding next year. And since I mentioned my online community, I would like to, I plan to write an email to you later, but I would like to thank the Progressive Radio Network now, because just this week I only learned about Progressive Radio this summer, so I've only been listening a short period of time, but just this week, in my online community, H.A. Goodman mentioned Charles Ortel and Daddy Cherry, and he's going to have them both on. And when I turned on RT last week, there was Charles Ortel. So I felt like I already knew them, and of course I learned about them through Progressive Radio, so I would like to thank you for that. And this morning on Democracy Now!, Henry Giroux was on, and of course Gary Noel has had him on his show. And I did a Facebook post of the program that you did with Dottie Cherry about her book, We Dare to Be Free, I believe was the name. And one of my friends who gives me a lot of negative comments for not supporting Hillary Clinton was very impressed by that, and she went out and she ordered that book right away on Amazon. So I wanted to let you know about that.
Julie, let me ask you about your own political transformation. Has there actually been one? Were you, let's say, part of a duopoly, and something happened and you decided, well, you're opting out?
Well, I did I did a few cycles back. I became, they call us, even though I live in New York, I still vote in North Carolina, and down there we're considered unaffiliated. So I became unaffiliated in the last three cycles. So I knew there was, I didn't belong, and the Democratic Party wasn't what I grew up thinking that it was. I grew up not in a political environment. I wouldn't have called myself political at all. I think I just voted Democrat most of the time because I thought that that was where I should, as a black person, that's where I should be registered. But I became disillusioned, and then I became an independent. And then when I got to New York, of course, I was exposed to a lot, all the different parties, you know, and living on the Upper West Side, it's very politically oriented anyway, and this is the bluest borough of the bluest state. So my ideas developed, and I started going to the independentvoting.org. I belonged to that group, and I really learned, I'm sorry to say, I feel ignorant here, but I always thought we had to have parties. I didn't really realize that that wasn't the intent. You know, the founding fathers didn't have that in mind to begin with, and now I'm learning. I had to go back and learn the history, and so I've developed to that standpoint. And then I was here for Occupy, and once I got involved with that movement, over the years, I consider myself now an informed citizen, and I wasn't before. So all of these avenues that we have to educate ourselves have been really important. I was politically ignorant 10 years ago.
Well, actually, what you have been describing, the work that you've been doing, you really have become a full-fledged agent of change, and you ought to be admired for that. Thank you so much, well, Julie, for your call today.
Thank you.
New Jersey, CC, you're on the air. Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me? Let me get off the speaker.
Yes, but it sounds like you're on speaker.
Yeah, I had to go on speaker.
That's not going to work too well.
To pay attention. Yeah. No, I'm off now, yeah. I just want to say I approve the lie that you told earlier. That Lead Stories is the place. And I agree with that, and I'm going to promote that I'll just call it the untruth, but really it's about, that's how it becomes true. That's how it becomes true.
Thank you.
You are appreciated, liked, and loved.
Thank you.
And you're welcome, quite welcome. I want to say that with the, Julie, I think it was the earlier caller, was kind of right on the path as far as I'm concerned. There is a strategy. I'm going to say, I mean, I'm kind of an optimist in on certain levels, try to be on most levels. And I'll say that this is the best of times for us to get off our assets and really, get up and going. And that's what it's really going to take. We've got some options. Jill Stein, I mean, I thought I was going to have to vote for Hillary, but promote Hillary for 2016 and promote Jill Stein for 2020. But based on what the Donald has done, I don't have to vote for Hillary. You know, he's taken care of that. What I do have to do is roll up my sleeves and get on my proper shoes to wake the town and tell the people about Jill Stein and John Lou Baraka. I feel that we've got something already set up, and I'm open if there's something better. I don't see anything better. Gary Johnson, you know, he blew two memory issues. That story. But I'm going to say, and I have to say, we do have a manual and the book that was mentioned by Judy in the previous call. But I come back to Ralph Nader's book, Breaking Through Power. It's subtitled, It's Easier Than We Think. So we got a little manual. And so between Lead Stories and, of course, Gary and on and on and on, we've got the tools. We've got the information. Now, the thing is that we have to work. We have to get up and really enjoy the process. And I want to say something else in reference to your fabulous show when we had the gentleman who called in from Haiti who was demonstrating. And I want to ask you this question, Yufriz. What is your understanding of voodoo? Is it a negative? What's the conditioning? What's the programming? What has been written into the dictionaries and encyclopedia about voodoo? to your knowledge?
I think, you know, it is a spiritual, it's a religion. I hate to use the word religion because it doesn't translate really well from, you know, the English translation of it is not quite precise. It is, it's part of life. It's a part of life, and it is a traditional, totally organic, spiritual guide by which people live for a long time and continue to live, because it is about culture, it's about a belief system, it's about the power it gives to an individual. This is really important to understand about it. It is really, at one level, it's very intensely personal empowerment in terms of the person understanding his or her role, not just in the community, but in life, and connecting ancestral power to our, you know, here and now power. It's a very complicated thing. It is not negative, although, of course, it's been demonized, and for interesting reasons, because it empowered liberation movements.
Yes.
Before the slave rebellions ever occurred, it was Bookman, who was a voodoo priest, who got people all centered to take on the fight. That's who they turned to first. So you have to understand the role of voodoo. It is a natural derivation of how people connected with their spiritual power, not just in the here and now, but as a continuum of struggle and of life. Voodoo has, just like Santeria, which is pretty much the same thing, and other religions like it, Candomblé and others, you have this constant connection with ancestors, with the gods, who are also gods, who are also human and who are also supernatural. Incredible power. And it encourages people to get to that point of incorporating the power and receiving power from your ancestors. The idea is that, you know, when you're gone, you're not just gone. You still have residual power, and people should tap into it. People should, through ancestral connections, you continue with their energy. So your energy in this life is important to develop, so that there's something to pass on that people can call on when they are in trouble, or they need guidance, or they need reinforcement. It's very complicated. But at one point, you can see how simple it is, because it is about life and continuity of life, except that life is everywhere. It's like all traditional religious concepts. They tend to have ideas that trees have life, the earth has life, animals on the earth have life, everything has life. And put here for us to relate to and to draw from. And we think of these religions because, if you know, the French would have absolutely nothing good to say about any system, whether religious or otherwise, that would defeat them. The British likewise, Spain, any colonial power. But this voodoo, as you could call it, it has different permutations. In Brazil, it absolutely was at the rock of rebellion. No question. In the United States, they didn't do voodoo, except in places like New Orleans, and where the Haitians came to liberate Louisiana to fight. Haitians came here to liberate people. So you see it all over in these various forms and permutations. You go to the Garifuna people of Central America, Honduras, and so forth. They are still rooted, exceedingly so, in these religious forms that continue to fortify them, to deal with the vicissitudes of life, everyday life, but they have a strength, and people can't figure out where it comes from. Santeria, same thing. It's African-derived, and from the same kinds of roots as voodoo. And you see a continuity about it. It's a fascinating thing. And it's too bad that it has suffered such a, really very bad, some really bad PR, because people have an interest in dissuading those followers of voodoo and similar traditional belief systems, because they simply are so powerful, people can't even grasp the power of them in the ways that they gird people to deal with life and to not be afraid.
Beatrice, this was this moment has been amazing, totally amazing. The last since I got on the call on the radio, I think this is a show. I think this is a show that you're the only person I know of that could put it pull together with our Haitian sisters and brothers. And there should be a call for people to get in touch with you at Lead Stories. My eyes were watering. I mean, I share it with some people that we should, because I'm feeling and sensing that this is our power. We don't have arms. We don't need arms. We have a positive spiritual force. And as long as we use it for good and preservation, the Native Americans need it in North Dakota. It's needed everywhere. As you said, it's gotten the press, because whenever it gets that press, we find out who's writing that press and then why are they writing it.
Exactly.
And they're writing it because it's the one thing they can't control.
You see versions of it in all societies where there has been sustained struggle. You see the connection with traditional religious beliefs. And, it was no mistake that Simon Bolivar, as a matter of fact, the liberator, went to Haiti and to receive instruction on how you take on the enemy.
Yes.
So it's all the way through major societies where you've had the experience of colonialism, especially, and imperialism, and people just having to resist and having to find a way to maintain their resolve and strength, despite the fact that it would on the surface look like they were done for. But that's not the case at all. Not the case. Thanks so much for your call today, CC.
Well, I'm going to say one thing. I just want to say one thing. This show needs to be downloaded, and you are our true agent for change, and we must match you by being change agents. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So
that's
very,
a great
very
thought.
Much.
Great thought.
You're welcome.
David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, Trish.
Hello.
How are you progressing?
I'm hanging in here.
That's
how are
good.
You?
103 fever, but that doesn't matter. If I sound delirious, it might not be any more different than when I'm not sick.
No, that's funny.
Oh, good. Oh, got you to laugh. I like that. Anyway, the first item of business is...
So what have you for us today?
Your listeners say they love you. Well, I'm one of them.
Well, thank
you. And they have to pray. And it's not very hard to do. You have to send your love while ordering the light to go to your trees. And you have to do your part, maybe by meditating and accepting the healing light.
I do that every day, by the way.
Oh, that's great, because I pray for you every day.
Thank you.
Even when I'm sick like now, I still do. I really didn't want to bring up the... I don't even know what to call it, a political situation. A farce. I guess that's a good word for it. I stumbled across the debate because I couldn't find anything I wanted to hear on a radio, so I went to BAI, and they had the debates. And the first thing I hear is Hillary talking about Putin and Russia. It sounds to me like when she's going to be president, there'll definitely be World War III. There's going to be some kind of confrontation. Since she's a
I think you're right. I think you're reading this absolutely correctly. She is itching for a fight. She wants her own personal little war. You know, every president is categorized somehow by a war.
Yeah.
And she's aiming at that.
And she's a warmonger, so it just fits. I don't want to even talk about Trump because he doesn't even belong where he is. He belongs in real estate or in a casino somewhere. So that tells me how dumbed down this country is. Sorry to say, I'm not saying anything about the PRN listeners, because they're probably the smartest audience I ever speak to. I speak to other audience. I tell them not to donate to the fraudation of Clinton and the Clinton globalist initiative. And they're trying to get me to vote for Hillary. So imagine how I feel about that.
Well, you know, that comes from the old view that you got to go with the winner.
Yeah.
Because if you don't go with the winner, that makes you what? The loser.
A winner.
So that's exactly the psychology. And because the media are full-fledged partners in this whole thing of brainwashing people into thinking the inevitable and the decided winner from the very beginning was going to be Hillary Clinton. They decided that.
Yeah, it was already decided. It's her turn.
Yes.
But whoever wins, the people lose, as you said.
Yep.
When you first said that, I said it exactly right. And I'm going to reiterate the point, as this country's been dumbed down, especially by the media. That's why we have the candidates to choose from, we do. And I said from the beginning, as soon as Bernie said, well, I'm not going to talk about emails, as soon as she said that, I said, he's a ringer. And he,
yeah.
You asked me, what do you think he's going to do with all his, I don't even know what to call them, followers? I said, yeah, he's going to give over Hillary, of course. I didn't have to be prophetic to say that. Okay, I won't take up any more of your time. I just keep continuing to pray and hope you get better and better.
Thank you, David. Thanks so much for your very kind thoughts and for your very, very heartfelt wishes. I thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Judy, you're on the air. Hello, Judy. Are you there? Okay. Then we go to Harvey from Berkeley. You're on the air, Harvey.
Hello, wonderful Utrice.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, I just wish you and your audience good health and much happiness. And,
thank you.
Thank you. And I know that this election is very, very important. But, you know, I'm an environmentalist, and in the two-year process, it's been a total distraction away from environmental problems like the heating of our planet. Earth's atmosphere now has more carbon dioxide in it than it has had in the last 15 million years. And the fossil fuel industry is diminishing our chances for a better life for us and our kids. And when we burn coal, oil, natural gas, and use uranium, which are all fossil fuels, we release vast amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And carbon dioxide is one of the most potent greenhouse gases that absorbs the sun's infrared radiation and turns it to heat. And that heat heats up our atmosphere. And this last September was the hottest month ever recorded. And the heating up of our atmosphere gives rise to longer droughts, like here on the West Coast, a five-year drought, more flooding on the East Coast, as well as stronger and more frequent hurricanes and tornadoes. And if that's not bad enough, it also gives rise to the rapid melting of our polar caps. And when there's a weight reduction on the bottom and the top of the Earth from the ice melting, that causes more movement in the Earth's tectonic plates, which again gives rise to stronger earthquakes and volcanoes. And so we must divest from the fossil fuel industry and reinvest in clean renewable energy like solar power, wind turbines that don't hurt birds, wave power, and plug our new electric vehicles into our new renewable energy infrastructure. And another way is to stand with America's indigenous tribal peoples in their fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. And Food and Water Watch, a great group, revealed that dozens of financial institutions are bankrolling the Dakota Access Pipelines. I believe the banks are giving the marching orders to the governor to bring out the dogs and all the heavily armored police. And so it's, the banks are addicted to fossil fuels just like a junkie. They can't give it up, even though the earth is going down. And as they make their profits, they privatize the profits and they socialize the losses, which are all the devastating environmental problems that we're having. So the Bank of America, HSBC, UBS, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan, Chase, Citibank, Food and Water Watch says they're all involved. And you can Google the words, how to contact the 17 banks funding the Dakota Access Pipeline, and they'll tell you the banks. And I suggest that it's time to call your banks. It's time to all of us to take individual action if we want to save the world for us and our children, to call the banks and tell them that if they continue to invest in the Dakota Access Pipeline, you're going to pull your account and put your money in a credit union. So I really believe it's time for us to get star powered, and I say let's get solar.
Okay. Thank you for your environmental education. Thanks
thank you,
a lot.
Adrian.
From Lawrence, Chris, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eugene.
Hello.
Hello, and good afternoon to the PRN and listeners and staff.
Thank you. Are you on speakerphone, Chris?
Oh, no, I'm on an earpiece, but I'm driving here. Let me pull over. Maybe you might be getting engine noise.
Okay.
Give me 1 second. I wanted to touch on your question from yesterday. I hope I'm coming up with an answer close to what you were asking. And
sure.
You asked what could we do on the micro level?
Yes.
And I would say that I don't know how much. Are you still getting that noise?
No, it sounds fine.
Okay. I don't know what we could do as far as the election is concerned, because I don't see much hope in that. And I think part of that is the problem. I think the vast majority of people, they see, I think what they've managed to do is remove the value from collective action from our minds. We don't look at this election like something we did or something we can do. The majority of people look at it like something that they are up to, but that we can maybe watch, but we have no real effect. The same as the majority of policies that get implemented, we have no say, and we actually don't agree with the majority of them, but they still happen. And so I don't think that looking to that system is going to work, or looking to change or push that system is going to work. I think if I'm getting this wrong, please stop me. I think on a micro level, what we should be doing is maybe, I'll give an example, something I tried with two family members and two friends. We say, guys, let's put our money together and help pay off each other's debts. they were a little uncomfortable with that, but I see that things like that are going to have to be necessary to reinstill this sense of collective benefit and collective action. And maybe a group of people agreeing to pay off each other's college loans, credit card debt, and even mortgages. I think getting people to group together in small groups that they can manage and control and maintain effective communication with, I think small groups like that, where we're not necessarily relying on banks and relying on, you know, our politicians to help us, but learning to help ourselves in smaller groups and then maybe expanding from there out. But I don't know if just, you know, across the country we can get everyone on the same page. Because even in smaller groups, and my attempt actually failed. You know, while these people were close to me in proximity, they weren't close to me in thinking. And so it's going to take a little more legwork on my part, but, you know, to find newer people to kind of engage. But I think that these ways of managing our finances and finding our power and realizing that we are powerful enough to help each other, because I don't think we even think that. And I think some exercises like that might help us get to that point outside of voting.
Well, you know, the system you just described is a system that has been going on forever in various parts of the world, especially in the Caribbean. It's called a SUSU.
Yes.
A group that you know and trust. It's not a large group. It's a small and manageable group of people get together. They agree to put in X amount of money every so often, whatever the rhythm is going to be. They determine that. And one person collects the whole pot, and it rotates. This has been going on for, I mean, as long as I've known myself, this is how banking was done. In Trinidad, where I was raised in a little village, people invested in gold and silver. And that was what they saved. They didn't go to a bank. They saved precious metals. And they had relationships with others in the same idea that there would be a relationship where they would pay down their debts, and it worked out just fine. No problem.
Yes. I'm sorry to interrupt.
So what you're describing has been in existence for a long, long time, to the point where, as I had remarked here on the program, the SUSU account came to the attention of the banks in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get people into the bank as customers, they started SUSU accounts, really.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, to capture the money, because they knew that while they were smack in the middle of a West Indian neighborhood, the deposits didn't look like they were in the middle, you know, doing good business, because people were doing their own banking in their own traditional way.
The SUSU actually did come up, and I believed in the idea, but let me tell you where we came into a disagreement. My concern was that there was no obligation to continue helping the group once you got your benefit.
And well, that is why you work with people you know and people you trust, and that's how it's done. It's not, you don't just get into a SUSU. In my time, for example, in my town, rather than deal with a bank, you joined a lodge.
Okay.
And the lodge was a place that all people kind of gravitated towards, because including the big thing that the lodge provided was that they would pay for your funeral. You know, you saved, they establish accounts so that in the event of, you know, that if you or a member of your family died, you know, you have some money saved. So the lodges were very, very important in getting people to, you know, save a little bit of money. But they didn't use banks. None of this involved the banks. The banks largely served the business sector, but most people didn't really use the banks.
And a part of the requirement that I wanted to have kind of implemented was once we get your debts paid down, we need an obligation that you'll help the next member, and also some sort of change in the behavior so that you don't bury yourself in the same debt we just bought you out of. Because my concern was that some people may turn it into a spending account as opposed to a, you know, as opposed to freeing yourself from debt. Don't just look at it like extra money at the end of a two-month period. And it was hard to get people to commit to changing behavior in that way.
Well, that's important as well, because if the idea is that you're saving and you develop your own system for saving, it should actually be a system for saving. So yeah. People do need to pay attention to that. However, you should do some research on SUSUs. In some places, it's okay. Called box.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. Talk to people who are part of that arrangement and find out how it works. Also talk to, you know, your community bank. The community bank, not the regular banks. The community bank.
I'll have to look for one of those because I haven't seen a community bank.
Well, you're in Lawrence, so you should look at Carver Federal Savings and Loan. It's a black-owned bank. And, by the way, it has an extraordinary record of reinvestment in the community. In fact, I did a story about this little bank topping the list, number one in terms of community reinvestment.
So they actually have, I think they have a location on Jamaica Avenue.
Yes, they do.
I'll take a look.
Take a look.
Thank you so much.
You know, it's a small bank, but it has had a very good record of stability, of excellent management, and most importantly, of community reinvestment. It was number one at the time that I wrote that story.
Maybe they have investment groups of some kind.
All right, but the idea is that I think you're onto something here by trying to take a different approach to how you deal with money. This is very, very important, how you deal with money. The SUSU idea is a very good idea. Make it very small with people you know. And that is very, very important.
And even if it's not money, if let's say your group is unemployed, maybe you guys get together and clean your neighborhood, or maybe you share laundry responsibilities. Just any activity that we can find that requires more than one person to work with another to kind of reinvigorate this energy of collective work and collective benefit. Maybe something like that would help to get us out of this current system.
But what you're doing is already helpful, because you're instituting within your family, you're instituting a paradigm. And that's very important. So just work at it, that it gets better and better. And then you have your own little empire right there. That's great.
Hopefully. Thank you, Sri.
Thank you.
Other people talk. Have an awesome weekend.
Thank you. You too. And
bye-bye.
Alex from New Jersey, we have a short time for you today, but you are on the air.
Hi, how are you, Treese?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I just wanted to say, first of all, like your previous callers have said, you know, I appreciate you being on the air, and I appreciate this platform. I've been listening for 2 years, and I can easily say that because of this show, I've become a more informed citizen. So for that, I just
thank
wanted
you.
To thank you.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, so I wanted to touch on a topic that is, I guess, is very off topic to what the show was today, but I just wanted to talk about electronic waste. So about 2 days ago, I came across a video about a situation that's been going on in Ghana. So if you type it up on YouTube, you can just put Ghana electronic waste. So in Ghana, they receive a lot of electronic waste from China, the United States, if you want, first world countries. So what they do with that is they have a lot of old technologies, you know, like DVD players, VHS players, TVs that aren't, I guess, up to date. And so what they do with all this technology is they just burn it, and they burn it for scrap metal. But, you know, if you see in the video, they have, like, a lake that is completely black due to, like, all of the pollution you see in the air. It just looks it's an unfortunate situation, you know. So I just wanted to bring it up, and I'll try to make it brief, that I think we should all be concerned about our consumer behavior. You know, a lot of young people especially, they, you know, buy a new phone every year, you know, to get the nicest camera or to use the latest apps, you know. But, you know, I think we should really ask ourselves, is it worth it? Because, you know, such a small, I guess if you want to say it, such a small upgrade can cause a lot of damage. And I think a lot of us don't really put much thought into where our waste goes and what happens to it. You know, can we dispose of it in a much cleaner way? Can, you know, we recycle these things more efficiently? So I just wanted to throw that out there, and I'll listen off the air. I'll let another caller get in. So thank you very much, Yatrice. Have a good day.
Thank you. That's an incredible contribution right there. Waste of all types. It's a major issue, especially in the so-called developing world, because many of them now have saddled themselves with the burden of receiving waste as a way of national revenues. You know, New York used to send its waste all the way to Haiti. And you wonder, well, geez, how come the environment is just so messed up? That's how come New York gets to be nice and clean and they dump it in Haiti. And supposedly they think that this is a big favor because, hey, they're paying for garbage disposal, essentially. But this is what happens. When Alex talks about a lake that is just black, you know what the other pieces of that puzzle are. People may still be fishing in that lake or swimming in that lake or in some way getting into contact with the water in that lake. And it now travels to an entirely different realm. You have environmental pollution, but then you have major diseases and disorders coming out of that because these people are stuck. They can't go anywhere. They don't have the luxury of packing up and moving. This is where they live. And they live with the toxic consequences of American and foreign consumerism. Now, the major companies know that is inevitable. What is going to happen when a phone is no longer usable? They know somebody's going to just throw it away, and they pretty much know that it's going to end up in somebody's environment as toxic waste. But do they care? No. We should. I agree with you, Alex. That brings us to the end of our program today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Reach me at leadstories@gmail.com and surround yourselves with positive people this weekend. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.